Hi, everyone. My name is Damara West, and I'm the founder of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, where we help women to center their liberation and joy so that they can lead and live lives based on their own terms. You have joined me for the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit, which is comprised of female writers and those that support the craft of writing to inspire women just like you to find their authentic voice and use it in ways they feel inspired to, including, but not limited to, of course, writing a book. And today I have Michelle Cassandra Johnson with me, which is the author of Skill in Action, Radicalizing Your Yoga Practice to Create a Just World, and Finding Refuge, Heartwork for Healing Collective Grief, with me today. Let me tell you a little bit about Michelle and what you're in for. Michelle is an activist, a social justice warrior, an author, anti-racism consultant, and trainer. She's an intuitive healer, a yoga teacher, and a wellness practitioner. She has led dismantling racism work in many settings for over two decades, and has a background and two decades of practice in as a clinical social worker. Michelle's work centers on healing from individual and collective trauma, coming back into wholeness, and aligning the mind, body, spirit, and heart. Michelle, thank you so much for saying yes to being on this lineup.
Thank you for inviting me to be part of the summit.
Yes, yes, my pleasure. So we're going to go ahead and dive right in, starting with our first question, which is, you know, through the work of Be Well, Beautiful Woman, I'm forever being reminded of the power of healing spaces. How did you expound upon your training as a social worker to bring individual and collective healing into people's lives in such varied ways?
Well, when I came to social work practice, I was not a yoga practitioner at the time. And I actually had practiced yoga and mindfulness, but I wasn't as connected with the practice of yoga as I am now at that time. And I remember working with my clients. I worked with a lot of clients who'd experienced trauma, intimate partner violence, sexual violence, racial trauma, grief and loss, body image issues, and eating disorders. And so I was working with a lot of disembodiment and the different ways that systems of oppression and dominant culture fragment us and move us away from the body. And at the time I was practicing yoga, and I had this moment with a client in my office where I thought, I'm talking about the body and mind, but I'm not actually leading this person through a practice to help align the body and mind and spirit. And it was a pivotal point in my practice and work because it's what led me to go through yoga teacher training. I was receiving the benefits of the practice of yoga and mindfulness in my own life, and I believe that had an influence on the collective at the time as well, and continues to now, but I wanted something deeper and some skills to share with my clients. And I think that really made me think about healing in a deeper, sort of more expansive way. What does it mean to heal the mind, the body, the heart, the spirit, and not just for our own individual benefit, but for the collective, because we're in relationship with everyone and everything. And from that point on, from being a social worker and a yoga practitioner and eventually teacher and bringing that into my private practice and through my dismantling racism consulting work, which feels like it is about healing too and transformation, I really just began to talk about my work as grief work, as healing work, as work centered on wholeness, as you read in the introduction when you shared my bio with folks listening to the summit. So to me, you know, all the different ways that I work, the books that I've written, the groups that I hold and facilitate, the individual intuitive healing work that I do with folks, the rituals that I lead, all of these things feel like they are to bring us back home to who we truly are, which is in connection with everyone and everything. Sometimes it's not so obvious to others, like, how do you do social work and intuitive healing and grief work? And what does that have to do with dismantling racism work? And I think it's all connected when we think about what is happening on the planet at this time and how so much of what is happening is based in keeping us separate from one another, disconnecting us from our true nature, not grieving what we need to grieve. So much of what is happening on the planet is not new. It's a replication of old systems and patterns. And I think we're being asked in this moment to transform in big ways to sort of steward the planet and future generations into a different experience, something other than the trauma, the collective trauma we are all experiencing at this time. So it all feels like wholeness and healing to me. That's a little bit about how I sort of expanded the work.
Yeah. Yeah. I appreciate you talking about your pathway, right? Because there's so many pathways by which that we can find ourselves immersed in healing. And, you know, one of the things that was really intriguing for me was that much of the work that you do mirrors the work that I have done as a practitioner. And, you know, my pathway as a licensed professional counselor and using that vehicle, what I realized that was, you know, that embodiment, the somatic practices was really where it was at to help people to integrate, as you said, right? So much of trauma really detaches us from self and in whatever modalities we're using, right? And I love what you said. You know, other people don't understand it, but we only need to understand it. We only need to understand that the core of our work is about transformation. And we do that in a lot of different ways, but the core of it is healing. And the fact that you have found so many ways to do that and been able to monetize and make a good living is one of the things that I felt so much affinity around, right? To bring you into the space so that people have a lot of different ways that they can see how their pathway may be connected to your pathway, right? Mm-hmm. And so I really appreciate that. And it brings me to my next question. You know, so many people don't see healing as a part, we don't talk enough about healing being connected to anti-racism work, right? Dismantling oppressive systems work. And yet this is the work that you have found as a practitioner in this space. So talk to us about why healing is really core while working to address systems, that individual and collective healing, and where does that hold a space in this work that you do as a practitioner?
Yeah, I think early on, I've been leading and co-leading anti-racism work, racial equity work for over two decades. And I'm 47, so I've been Black for 47 years. So I have an experience in this culture and when I say culture, I've only lived in the US. So this culture where white supremacy persists and really doesn't want Blackness to be. So there's the embodied lived experience of racial trauma. And then the training that I did and sort of went through with a collective to become a racial equity consultant. And early on, I realized that what we were inviting people to do and what we were doing ourselves as space holders was really about healing. And I've not only learned that through my dismantling racism consulting work, but I also learned that from working in a lot of different nonprofits, because what I would see is a replication of the patterns we were fighting against in those nonprofits. For example, not caring, not practicing collective care within the space, right? But asking people to practice collective care as we were trying to inspire and transform and motivate people, right, connected to the nonprofit. And in the dismantling racism work and trainings, specifically community trainings or trainings with organizations, I noticed some of those same patterns of a replication of what people are saying they wanted to actually shift and a lack of awareness about that, therefore a lack of commitment to that deep transformative work that has to happen if we want a different world. And I feel like having a sort of social work mind and really wanting to understand how systems work and why we continue to harm one another and why there's so much suffering on the planet, that really led me to be like, this is about healing, right? And we have different work to do based on our social location and our identities to heal, but as a collective, we need to heal as well. So it felt natural to me. And I know that it's not always centered in the conversation how anti-racism work is healing work, because often people think about anti-racism work as consciousness raising work. So I know more, but does that mean I'm actually going to do something different in my life moving forward, right? There's the intellectual, and then there's the deep understanding, embodied experience and awareness that will actually lead me to take different actions in my life to actually be in integrity with what I say I value and believe. And I saw a lot of and experienced a lot of misalignment in spaces that claimed they wanted to engage in dismantling racism work, and in spaces, as I mentioned before, in some of the nonprofits where I work. So I think, you know, if we don't center healing, which to me includes centering like our own personal work, our collective work, ritual and practice together, not giving into urgency, because that often will replicate these patterns, even though we have urgent concerns to respond to. If we don't sort of center healing in the ways I just named, I think we're just going to create more harm. We're not actually going to do the work that we say we want to do. It's really challenging to transform systems that are massive, that are old, that are so deeply embedded. And I feel like we have to prioritize healing. And again, that looks different for different people if we want to engage in this work and practice. And that it's not a, although, you know, I wish racism would go away today, right now, in this moment. That's not going to happen. I'm realistic about it. It's not going to happen in my lifetime. I do not think it's going to happen. It's been around for quite a long time. But the way in which people approach this work at times is like, I've gone to 3 trainings, so now I know, or things aren't as bad as they were before. Well, that really depends on your lived experience and perspective. Things are pretty bad if we think about racism, if we think about capitalism, if we think about planetary devastation and destruction and climate change. Things are, you know, they are urgent, and these issues are pervasive. And so I feel like, and healing is also a process that takes time and is not linear, which to me mirrors the process of dismantling these systems of oppression, in particular dismantling racism. So I would say that they feel very connected, and healing has to be centered in the work if we're truly going to dismantle systems. It has to be in the spirit of healing.
That deeply resonates with me. And, you know, there's 2 things that I'm gathering from what you said. The first thing is that, you know, knowledge consciousness is one layer, right? I mean, what we're talking about is connect heart consciousness, right? Making it a part of the way you be, which takes a lot of time and practice to peel back all the ways in which we have absorbed messages that are detrimental to the identities, no matter what side of the spectrum that we may lie on, right? Whether that be the side of privilege or that be the side of oppression and all the other things that come in related to intersectionalism. And another thing that I gather from what you said, and I say it often in the work that I do, is that you can change systems all day long. Systems can't change people. And the harm that's been done to people that's causing them to act outside of the power that they have been born with is one of the things that will continuously keep us down. And that's a lot of times where that generational work, real healing work really lies, right? And so systemic work can't change generations. It can future, right? But if we don't change some of the ways that we think, which comes through the pathway of healing, then we'll continue to do harm, right? Like you said. So that was really, really beautiful. So I want to switch gears just a little bit and just talk about how our voice is stripped from us, right? And we know that so oftentimes when we do feel oppressed, you know, the core of that is making us feel unseen, making us feel unheard, and really thinking that and making us feel as if we don't have power, which affects our voice, our ability to storytell. And sometimes we are overactivated in that area, and sometimes we are underactivated in that area. So I'm curious for you, to explore the ways in which you have found or sustained your voice while on your storytelling journey, because you know, I imagine that storytelling has played a part in every facet of the work that you've done.
Yeah, I love this question because I really want to be a storyteller, and I don't often think of myself that way. Not because I don't use my voice. I use my voice all of the time, but because I like am in awe of the storytellers, right, who can weave. So I'm just sitting and thinking about claiming that, because I have put my voice out there in many, many ways, right, in presentations and books and summits like this. So thinking about that. And I'm also present to my middle name, which is Cassandra, which there's a whole myth in Greek mythology about Cassandra and how she was a truth teller and was cursed and couldn't be heard. And I didn't know that when I was a child. My mom didn't know that either. I learned that about 20, 25 years ago. Someone shared that with me. And it, I was like, oh, I've had this experience of using my voice and saying, hey, y'all, this thing's going to happen. And people wouldn't listen to that. And then it would happen. And so it's sort of like sat with me when that mythology was shared with me, because it felt very resonant of my experience. And I've thought about that since then, because I've read more of the mythology, which is really that, you know, Cassandra could be heard. People just didn't want to hear what she was saying, which is quite different than not being able to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so that feels connected to my story too. Like people can hear, it's just their denial or where they are, right, in place, if they're not awakened, right? There are so many things that get in the way of people listening deeply and hearing, and there's systems that, you know, profit from distracting people from the truth about what is going on. I think that I don't feel like I've really felt fear around using my voice. Maybe a long time ago, but I haven't felt fear around like speaking in quite a while. And I also really at some point, and it was before I started to write my first book, Skill in Action, trusted that I had a story to tell. And I think that's part of it, as people are thinking about what do I want to offer, contribute? How do I want to be a storyteller? Trust there's a story that you have to tell. And I knew that the way I would tell it was different than someone else who may have even been doing similar work, right? I have a unique experience in this body and needed to tell a story. And the hope was through that book that it would transform wellness in yoga spaces. So there was deep intention connected to it. So I would say that as well for people thinking about story and how to use it, think about your intention around that as well. And certainly to your point and your question, systems of oppression, in particular white supremacy, don't really want me to use my voice and tell a counter narrative to what dominant culture and white supremacy is sharing, is telling us, is and the ways it's training us. So I've definitely had to work through my own internalized racial oppression to be able to use my voice in the way that I do, and to recognize when I'm responding to an internalization, something that may not actually be true about who I am, but comes from a dominant narrative. Like I've had to do deep, and that's constant work. It's ongoing work. That's ongoing healing work, I would say, which to me feels like it's allowed me to trust my intuition, to trust my voice, and to put my voice out there in the ways that I have. And I understand very clearly that a tactic of oppression is to silence us.
Yeah.
And there's a risk when we actually speak a truth, particularly if it's a counter narrative to dominant culture. So I understand that as well. And for me, when it's possible, and that has some to do with my proximity to power based on some of the identities I embody, and some of it's just who I am, I'm going to speak my truth, mm-hmm. right? When it's possible, I want to take that risk to use story to advance our collective liberation and help us get to a different place. So that's some about voice, some of what I would offer.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what I so appreciate, I mean, it was such a beautiful answer in general, but, you know, also just how you led with the fact that you don't often see yourself as a storyteller, right? This, because when you look at the greats, whoever those folks might be, you're not that, but the reality is that you are that, right? You're that in the form of you. And, you know, even though you have written and used your voice in so many different platforms to say that is deeply inspirational, right? Because what it speaks to is the fact that we're all on this journey and we don't always necessarily embody all the magic that we hold, because we know that healing is literally like an onion, and there's always more for us to discover about self and our power, and an invitation to step into it. And our healing, right, creates that pathway by which we're able to find that and continue to stay integrated in that in times when the world is saying to be silent. And so that was so beautiful. Thank you for offering that gift. Because so oftentimes we forget that we're all human on this journey. We're having this, you know, we're spiritual beings having this human experience. And because of that, the only way that we can stay in spirit form is really through practice. And so thank you so much for all, everything that you gave on top of that definition, right? What your name has meant, right? And that embodiment of it. And it's an invitation, I think, for all of us to really understand our lineage and the history and the ways in which we have been brought into the world and how we're embodying those things, and whether or not we are conscious of them or not. So again, sis, thank you so much for that. So oftentimes, you know, folks feel like storytelling is not necessarily a pathway to abundance, right? And that if we're using creative elements, the majority of us don't necessarily access a luxurious lifestyle, a lavish lifestyle. When I use those words, I'm talking about, right, based on our own terms. And so in what ways has the life of storytelling afforded you a life rooted in abundance?
I feel like I love this question because I think about abundance as more than financial comfort or security, right? I think about abundance of community, abundance of opportunity, generative experiences as well. If it's a work experience where I'm being paid, like generative experiences where I'm going to grow and learn alongside the people I'm working with. So I just want to let folks know that, like, I think about it so abundance of rest, abundance of space so broadly. And this is for many reasons, want to be comfortable financially and secure. And it's not just about money. It is about my story around money and how I grew up and what money represents. So I'll offer that as well, like what it represents, which to me, it represents security and like options and agency at times. So I'll name that and be transparent about that. And I think that's the reality for many people. Like, if we're resourced financially, often we can make different choices than folks who are not. And we know there's a whole system in place to keep folks, some folks more proximal to power and some folks further away from that. So I'll locate myself there as well in that space of being connected to power. And I love what you said about, you know, there is this myth that if we are storytellers or do any sort of creative work, if we're an artist, right? If we're a facilitator, even if we're a space holder, if we're a person who holds ceremony and rituals, that we cannot experience abundance in the way that I named, and that has not matched my experience. It's been really hard work, I will say that. Mm-hmm. But I was saying this to a friend the other day, the evidence that I have is that I will be held and resourced and cared for. Mm-hmm. I have more evidence of that than the opposite, than I'm not going to have enough. And I don't mean that in a bypassy way or like, just think about abundance and you'll have it. I actually don't mean it in that way at all. And it's true. Like when I've taken a risk and not known, I don't really have a secure job, what I'm going to do, something has worked out. Yeah. A contract has come through in that moment. And I'm like, okay, now I can move back to North Carolina and do this work in this way. So it's just happened enough that I trust it. So I would just offer that to people. And it also requires that we conspire with spirit and ancestors and whoever your helpers, whoever you think they are, that we're like co-conspiring when we call things in, we actually, and they like show up, we actually need to engage with them in some way and do our part to make them happen. That feels deeply rooted to abundance as well and connected to it. And I would say like coupled with that experience of trust, right? Trusting and the evidence that I have that I'll be cared for and resourced and taken care of. I think that this myth that if we're creative people and we're storytellers, we won't experience abundance. It makes me think about like, who is that myth in place for and in service to, mm-hmm. right? It's not in service to my dharma and why I'm here on the planet to believe that I won't have an abundant life if I take this pathway. Yeah. It's not in service then of other people and collective care and collective practice. So it just makes me think about why that's in place and how we can begin to sort of break that apart and debunk that by looking at all of the creative ways throughout time, people have experienced an abundant life in all of the ways, doing the work they were most meant to do. And this work that we've been talking about, dismantling racism work, being a social worker, or a professional counselor, being a facilitator, a space holder, creating an experience like this, right? It requires our creativity, our genius, our brilliance, and it requires us to trust that. So whatever practices people can do to more deeply lean into their brilliance is a way that I think it's an antidote to that myth that if we're creative, we can't make ends meet, because it's just not true. There are many examples of people who are making it work in some way. It's just not the linear way, and it doesn't fit into the system of capitalism in the sense of we produce and that's what we do. We're not spirits, right? We're bodies that produce, and we create this thing and we get this from it. Like, we're talking about something that's broader than that.
Yeah. Again, such a profound answer. And it made me think about source is the source, right? And oftentimes, you know, all we have to do is trust and work. We show up, we practice, we raise our consciousness so that we can see and hear more. We have the courage to walk through the door, and we keep that process. It's the ongoing cycle. And, you know, I so appreciate what you said, that I believe that if we're given a gift, there's a pathway by which that's been created for us to monetize on that gift. And so that was just so beautiful. And that reliance on all of the things in the spiritual realm to support us on our journey, that all of it is here unfolding for us. And that it's about perspective. You're like, if you really look back over your life, you have been held, you have been cared for. You have grown quite a bit. You have experienced wealth in a lot of different ways in your life, and pathways have been rolled out for you and flow and all of that. And so thank you, because a lot of times we're giving our power away, right? And mm-hmm. Alice Walker said it best, that the number one way we give our power away is thinking that we don't have any. And source, we're waiting on source, and source is waiting on us, mm-hmm. right? Source is like, I've been here. I'm just waiting on you. That is the impotence of free will. And so thank you for giving us such an insightful response to that pathway of abundance and all the ways in which it can show up in our lives. So as we get ready to wrap up, the last thing that I want to explore with you is that, you know, we're always being called to evolve. And considering that, I imagine that right now in this moment, there are ways that you're being called to evolve, and there are ways that you are massaging that calling, right, to help it come to the forefront. And so in other words, you know, where are you currently finding you're being called to grow? And which could be directly related to storytelling or maybe not. And what are you doing to counter it?
Yeah, it's interesting, because the other day, someone who had just met me, who was at my home for a ceremony, said, "What do you do?" And I said, "I'm a spiritual teacher." And it's the first time that I've led with that and said that and sort of claimed that's what I am. I'm many other things. And my best friend was here, and she was listening, and she spoke to me about it later. She's like, "I'm so glad that you led with that, because that is who you are. That is what I'm evolving to be, right? I'm in the process of becoming that at the same time," which is how I think evolution works anyway. And people listening and you may think I already thought I was a spiritual teacher, or I already thought I was a storyteller, but that's not how I described myself. I describe myself as an activist, as a dismantling racism trainer. These things are still true. It took me a while to describe myself as an author, even though I had written 2 books. It was like, it took a minute to get there, because I never considered myself a writer. Mm-hmm. And I've since then written 2 other books, which will come out in 2023. So it's, in 2023. And so it's just, I'm evolving into this space of claiming, my experience as a spiritual teacher and as someone who can offer spiritual teachings connected to ritual and ceremony and yoga philosophy and mysticism and alchemy and magic. I mean, I think that is what I'm evolving into, which I think I've been doing in different ways, but not claimed it in the way that I am now. Because it feels different to me than saying, for me, than saying I'm an activist. I'm not saying that's less than, it just feels very different and more aligned with like why I'm here on the planet at this time. Yeah. And that people want to receive my teachings, need to receive my teachings, just as I need to receive teachings from folks and from the natural world. So that's the way I'm evolving. And I think responding to it by claiming it.
Yes. Oh my gosh. That was so, that was deep. And even though you didn't articulate it this way, I believe what you're offering is that as we practice in time, identities change. Mm-hmm. Deepened your practice. And as you deepened your practice, this revelation is now you are a spiritual teacher. And not that you're not all of these other things, but I imagine that activism and everything that you've done falls underneath that spiritual teacher category. Mm-hmm. And just embodying that. And so oftentimes we make things so much harder, right? Like seeing yourself as a writer and the expansion that happened because of that. Now seeing yourself as a spiritual teacher, now whatever additional things are going to open up as a result of that. And I imagine that if we were to look back at your life and come back together 5 years from now, it's going to look really different because I imagine you're going to keep practicing. And as you keep practicing, more revelations are going to be revealed to you, helping you to become more aligned, right? And so even within the identities that we hold, we may find that those identities no longer feel right. They don't vibrate right in our system anymore because we've expanded past that. And, mm-hmm. and I love what you said. That's not to minimize the role that anybody's playing, wherever they're at in their pathway. We're simply acknowledging that when we practice, we expand. And that expansion allows for different pathways by which that we're able to touch people's lives through our work. And so that was just, that was perfection. So as we get ready to wrap up, what final words of inspiration would you like to impart to the audience about storytelling or anything related to our healing journey?
I think it's connected to what you just named about how evolution continues to happen. And this has been true that who I am now is different than who I was yesterday, or certainly a year ago or 5 years ago. And knowing that allows me to be in the flow of that versus resisting the evolution. It's just naturally occurring because of practice, because I'm co-conspiring with spirit and my guides and my ancestors. And so I would offer that, you know, to people listening, that it's what you said, who you are today is not you're not fixed in time. Mm. None of us are fixed in time. Yes. And so just that awareness, I think, can lead to the expansion that you were talking about. We aren't fixed. I'm not fixed in time. You're not. This moment isn't, right? It's shifting as we speak. And an awareness of that, I feel like, can help us grow individually and collectively.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. I am just so honored that our paths crossed. And I know that the listeners, the women tuning in today, are going to definitely want to keep tabs on you. So please share with us how we can stay in touch and keep a pulse on the work that you will continue to do to heal the world.
Yeah, thank you for inviting me to be here. And the best way to find me is my website, which is michellecjohnson.com. It's updated all the time with events, and some of them are online and some are in person. And they cover a range of topics around grief, around radicalizing our spiritual practice, ritual as well, how we heal in community and together. So a lot of offerings are there. And then I'm on Instagram, Skill in Action is my handle, and people can find me there too. I post many different things, events, and then pictures of my dog and my garden and many other things and musings about the world and what's happening. Those are the best ways to find me and stay in contact.
Okay, great. Well, again, I am just deeply, deeply, deeply appreciative of being in community with you And I just want to thank you that, you know, just knowing that I'm not alone in my work and that there are a lot of people out there just like me who are doing their part and however they're being called to touch the world. And so thank you for bringing that into this space today. So audience, you heard it here. Make sure that you continue to tune in and not just absorb the greatness of this interview, but all of the other interviews that will be a part of the Women Who Write to Liberate Summit to inspire you to amplify your voice. If you're not already, make sure that you're following us at Instagram at bewellbeautiful. I was going to say .com, but that's not the Instagram handle, at the letter bewellbeautiful. And check out all the work that we have coming down the pipeline as well at bewellbeautiful.com. Until next time, beauties, ashe.